So why do we care about successive trials? One of the things I like to do whenever I look at an area of law is not try to learn a bunch of rules that are associated with it, but try to figure out what's animating those rules and what are the principles, because every time the court comes up with a rule, they come up with a case that is the exception to the rule, and they have to keep going back to it. So, you know, why do we care about successive trials? And the reason is because they can become a potent instrument of oppression. This is how the government wears you down. As an aside, you know, kind of goes back to the whole idea with multiple punishments. We just fought a war for independence, and I have a hard time believing the founders sat down and said, let's make it so the government can't oppress you unless they really, really want to. And that's what we're worried about here. And you can see, I pulled these pretty much out of order from the paper. At every point, the Supreme Court talks about, okay, why is this important? And the cases start off saying, look, nobody wants to be in trial. And any trial, no matter what the subject's on, you're waiting for trial, you're sitting through it, you're talking about embarrassment, it's expensive, you know, it's something to go through. You got a continuing state of anxiety and insecurity about it. And that's going to be incident to any trial if everybody's doing things right and everybody's doing things above board. And even when you're doing that and you're not trying to do anything wrong, there's the increased chance of conviction of innocence. You know, the more times you go through a trial, even if you're innocent, you know, at some point the state's going to get the right jury, the witness is going to sound just right, and they're going to get a conviction where they shouldn't have one. And that's a real problem. And that's when you're not trying to do anything wrong. And so finally you get to the point where the Supreme Court looks at it and says, you know, this oppression isn't just incidental, and it's not just something that can be avoided. It's something we need to look out for because there's a specific threat, that there are going to be some prosecutors who are going to say, we have the opportunity, if we jigger this right, to try this person multiple times, and we'll see how things are going after the first trial, and then we'll make the changes we have to do to maybe get a conviction the second time around. So this continuum goes from, you know what, it's just nobody wants to sit through second trials, to there could be real prosecutorial misconduct. So these are the things that you need to consider when you're looking at this. You know, there are also some other interests. The first two are related to some we just talked about, but they're just different. You know, it's not just that you only want to be tried once. It's the idea that, well, we picked a jury. This is my jury. These are the people I want to decide my guilt or innocence. And so the Supreme Court has broken that out and said, you have an individual right to those jurors. In the preservation of finality, it's not just that I don't want to have to do this again. It's that at some point, I want to know that it is done. It's the same thing that the state now argues with latches, that at some point it's going to be done. So let's have that sense of peace about it, win or lose. And that's why the double jeopardy clause applies, not just after you've been acquitted and the state may be trying to take a second bite at the apple, but when you've been convicted and they're going to try you again anyway. And finally, the other interest, and I put this in red, not because it's more important, but because it doesn't involve the defendant, is the state's interest in what they call one full and fair opportunity to obtain a conviction. And so what you're going to end up seeing is that every one of these cases is a balancing of these interests. How many of the defendant's interests are at play, and is the state going to get its one full and fair opportunity? And that's why in Currier v. Virginia, the last double jeopardy case from the Supreme Court, this is the way they phrased it. You know, we're not looking at the clause, and we're not saying it wasn't written or even originally understood to pose this obstacle to the administration of justice when it doesn't look like any of the interests at play are actually at play. You know, if there's no danger of oppression, you've run through the checklist, this isn't a jeopardy situation. They say there just isn't any risk for it, and that's the way they're looking at it now. And so really what you're asking when you're confronted with a situation where you think jeopardy may come up, or as we'll see later, a situation where it's not a straight pretrial jeopardy claim, but where the principles are just at play, is does barring a second trial serve these interests? That's how you have to approach these problems. And so the first thing is, you know, do you have a prior jeopardy event? When does jeopardy attach? So you have to have jeopardy attaching, you have to have, going back to the checklist, it attaches, it's resolved, and then you've got a second jeopardy. So when does jeopardy attach in the first place? You know, and looking at the proceeding you're sitting through or about to sit through, will your guilt be decided by this proceeding? You know, we can go through all the cases, and we're going to hit them in order, but so many cases are decided on the fact that this really wasn't even just a Jeopardy event. We're all here. We talked about evidence, but this just isn't the sort of proceeding where my guilt can be decided. So, and just to apply the principled framework to the case law here, we're all comfortable with the fact that a Jeopardy attaches at a jury trial when the jury is impaneled and sworn. Bench trial differs a little bit between federal and state practice, but either when the judge begins to hearing evidence or the defendant pleads to the charging instrument, which is going to be right before they start hearing evidence. Okay, and we understand those rules, we're comfortable with them, and they make sense. You know, going back to the interest here, this is the day that the judge has made. Let us all rejoice. We know why we're here. This is going to be the day when all the waiting, all the preparation, all the stress that goes into trial, if things go okay, is going to be wrapped up. And when I say okay, I don't mean necessarily the way the defendant wants, but if a fair trial is had, then we're going to go through. If he's acquitted, he's acquitted. That's the end. If he's not acquitted, if it was a fair trial, there may be some appellate stuff afterwards, but there's not going to be another day in court. And that's really what we want. Besides being the fact that your waiting is over and the state's going to have their one, hopefully, full and fair opportunity, you've got your fact finder.